This must be the bathroom. Hey, how'd you punks get past my hundreds of minions and my guards posted at the door?
Oh, well, there was this one guy we kind of accidentally beat into the concrete, and then the other guy kind of, like, smashed through a wall, and, it wasn't that hard.
Accidentally, my artificial behind. You will not take down the Great Abedo as easily as you took down my guards, that apparently were much more inept than I previously believed. Unguard!
All right, everybody in your mix.
You think that these simple, primitive machinations can take me down? I laugh at your patheticness. Hey-yuck!
I threw all my keys!
Damn yourself, exposition, Momo! How dare you slap the Great Albedo! It's a bit frou-frou, I must mention. Your attacks do not cease to hurt me, which is quite amazing that your mechs do not manage the same. I shan't give in to a little girl like you, though. I have the ability to detach body parts out of you like that, huh?
Everybody abandon your gears!
No, abandon your machines! Don't come out!
Choo-choo!
Stop hitting me in the face! It really hurts!
Not the feather duster! Get back with the feather duster!
We beat him!
Hello, I'm the architect of Xenosaga. You might have seen my cousin in the Matrix. He designed the Matrix, and much like him, I designed Xenosaga, and I have some bad news, everybody.
What's that?
Well, you see, you defeated Albedo, and this is supposed to be a six-part series, and, well, we're only three-quarters of the way through part one, and created a horrible paradox, and we should be winking out of existence right about now, actually. James, that's the last time I let you go and use a strategy guide on this game.
Oh, jeez, come on.
Those clever engineers.
But now...
Time for ASO Radio.
Welcome to ASO Radio, episode 57. That's the fifth episode of the fifth season. This is NZ17.
And Z-Guy.
That's right, Z-Guy back from the dead. Alright, so Z-Guy's not actually back from the dead, he's back from the undead. That's right, don't you hate it when people kill your zombie friends?
Oh, yeah, and it's a lot of traveling, too, I'll tell you what.
Yeah, I actually kind of feel like we're vampires, Z-Guy, because we're always awake at night.
We are, aren't we? It's funny how stuff like that happens.
Yeah, it's just craziness.
Anime is so cool.
Yeah. Anime, you can watch it any time of the day.
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, T-Man, of course, he left us last week. It was his final episode on the show, rather sad.
Yeah.
But, you know, what can you do is such... cutting his legs off below the kneecaps, and then he has a really hard time moving around. It'd be kind of cruel. But on the plus side, he'd stay on the show, and so it's not all that bad.
No, I guess not.
Anyways, what we need to do is this show, we actually have some real anime news, unlike the past three shows or so. And then we'll be reviewing the very lovely anime Serial Experiments Lang. And we'll follow that up with our fan mail. And then wrap it up with a Hotspot video game review.
Oh, yeah.
And what is it we'll be reviewing this week, Z-Guy?
I think it's Xenosaga.
Ah, their willas are mocked, huh?
Oh, yeah.
No, actually, that's wrong. It's their villas are mocked since it's German, but it's all good. You know, it's actually a conspiracy. The Axis still exists. All right, well, enough of our crazy ramblings and our talking of disembodied androids. I think it's time we move on to the anime news.
And now it's time for the Any O'Clock Anime News.
Alright, so, like I said, this time we got some real video game news.
Oh, man.
We got some real anime news. And this, of course, is coming courteous of the Anime News Network. And so, you know, we give them our mad props. First up, some news about Yu-Gi-Oh! The Movie's DVD release. It's kind of like it's earned all the money it's going to earn in the theaters. Slightly under $20 million it's done in theaters at this point. Anyways, Warner Brothers has announced that the Yu-Gi-Oh! Will be released on DVD November 16th, apparently. That only falls 3 months after the movie's theatrical release, which means either one of two things. Number one, it didn't do very well at the movie theaters, and frankly, a two-digit profit isn't that big. Or number two, Warner Brothers realizes this could not win for Best Animated Picture. So they're bringing it home early. Apparently it'll come out at a suggested retail price of $27.95, and it will be in widescreen, in fact, and not be that horrible cut-off full frame. I hate it when they do that in movies.
I do too. I hate that.
It's like you're missing out on a third of the movie. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it will apparently also have 5.1 digital Dolby surround sound and other extras. Let me tell you, I'll buy the DVD just for the extras. As the movie was created for North America, no release has been announced for Japan, nor has a Japanese audio track be included on the DVD, since this was a for America production. But you know, this line between anime and American, you know, animation is really starting to blur. Because anime is so popular over here, you got all these crazy studios paying money to have these Japanese studios go and record for them, and it's just crazy because it's like, is it still anime if it's paid for by an American studio but it's published in Japan? Or does it have to be completely, you know, done in Japan? Or let's say the theory was created in America and so the ideas were put to ink there. It's really kind of blurry. But to me, as long as the ideas came from Japan, it's still anime, you know?
Yeah, I think so. And all the quality comes from there, you know, so having an American company get their hands in it might lower it a little bit, but I think if it originally comes from Japan, if somebody thinks it up there, whatnot, I think it is.
Well, you know, with any sort of financial backing of a project, they, of course, have the ultimate say because they're the ones publishing and paying for the movie, so their calls get, you know, done. So I'm sure Warner Brothers had a bit of influence over what was and was not in the movie, kind of tailoring it for an American audience, but hopefully it still remained a large part of its international appeal.
All right. I didn't know anime had so many ethics.
I know, it's crazy. I'll let you take this next one, D-Guy.
All right. Have you ever wondered how to draw manga promoted by AOL? Seems like AOL's teen-oriented Red service is promoting the How to Draw Manga series of books. The words kind of split in the middle of the scene there. Anyway, each
word wrap.
Oh, there we go. Anyway, each week the site will feature sample pages from a different volume of the series and will allow members to submit the manga arts they create through the samples.
Very interesting.
Very interesting indeed. That is if you like AOL.
Yeah, well, you know, you don't actually have to be an AOL subscriber to see the AOL content. You can actually go to AOL.com and usually click your way around to find the most of the AOL members' only, quote-unquote, stuff they have.
Mm-hmm.
I find it interesting, though, not only are they going and they're showing this How to Draw Manga series, which in itself is rather cool, but, and a bit out of the box for AOL, I mean, okay, sure, we just did a story about Warner Brothers, AOL, Time Warner, they paid for Yu-Gi-Oh!, but still, you know, AOL's going where what's popular these days is anime and manga. I mean, it's actually funny, in the top 100 books sold every month, about like 80% of it, we'll say 70-80%, is actually manga paperbacks. And so those graphic novels have really been selling, so I guess it's a logical next step. But still, seeing AOL do it, kind of, you know, unusual, plus also being able to allow members to show the art they created, it's pretty interesting.
I must agree, AOL doing it is kind of weird, but it might actually draw other people into stuff like anime and stuff and help build up a little bit of revenue there for future reference anyway.
Yes, I'm sure there's more than one old otaku groaning about the fact of more youngins coming onto the wagon, especially through anime such as, you know, Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon and whatnot. But the plus side to this is these people that are groaning aren't really seeing the long-term benefit. Is Pokemon started this really big anime craze here in America.
Oh, yeah.
Before that, it was more or less under the mainstream, but it's slowly been gaining steam.
Mm-hmm.
This brought it to the forefront, and a lot of people lamented this fact, and admittedly, at the time, certainly does suck.
Yeah.
But, you see, the great part is it brings all these people into anime and manga. And so, given 5-10 years, all of these greenhorns will have thus matured in their anime viewings, those that have seeked out more anime to watch, and thus, we will have a much larger pool of anime fans to pull from, forming many more anime groups across the country. So I think in the long term, good thing. Short term, get the hell out of the chat room. All right, next news item. Madhouse, a very popular animation studio, is going to be animating, get this, a new Highlander movie. Yes, they've actually been contracted to go and animate Highlander Vengeance, which will be completed in 2006, and will actually be scripted by the writer of the TV series. Now, T-Man is a big fan of the Highlander TV series, from what I recall.
Yes.
And I liked the first movie, but in my humble opinion, and I never stopped to watch the TV show, but what I've seen when channel surfing, well, everything after the first movie sucks. And I hate, you know, to go and step on anybody's toes that may like the other stuff. If there can only be one, and he killed the last one besides him, then there is one, and we have no problem, and thus need no more movies. But apparently, some others had been trapped in a cave in Japan, so they actually were living under a rock, and hadn't known that there was only one, and so they came out, and then they started a whole bunch of new movies. Alright, take this next one, Z-Guy.
Ooh, a little bit far. Anyway, Gundam F-91 release is being changed. The Gundam F-91 release has also had a number of improvements made to it. The English audio will feature a 1.5 Dolby mix, and a second DVD of extras is being added to that.
And of course, you know, those Gundam fans are all about the collectability.
Oh yeah, they're getting prime here. They're getting their dues.
Some good news comes out of the Venice Film Festival, where Howl's Moving Castle has recently been shown. Apparently, it's won the Golden Ocella Award.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's very nice indeed. Unfortunately, it didn't go on to win the top honor, but still impressive nonetheless.
Yeah, I must say.
All right, let's see. Apparently, the Ghost in the Shell 2 graphic novel has just been announced by Dark Horse. It's going to collect together a number of stories and be released under the title Man-Machine Interface. It should be coming out about January 19th and retail for $25. Apparently, the paperback will include a couple of pages of sexually explicit material that the original author, Shil Rao, took out of the previous print, but decided to restore for this edition, a.k.a. Dark Horse said, we can sell more copies this way. For this reason, the paperback will be shrink-wrapped, unlike usual manga, which is open for people to flip through, and carry an 18-plus age advisory. Now, personally, my take on this is that they're isolating a large part of their audience. Yes, most of the people that are in the Ghost in the Shell, admittedly, are in their older teens or in their 20s, but there's still a number of people that are under 18 that like Ghost in the Shell that would like to buy this. Now, of course, I'm sure there's a number of ways that they can go about getting this outside of a bookstore, but still, making it harder for those people to get it, I don't really think it's worth the extra pages. Now, if they came out with a special edition that had these extra pages, I think that would make a bit more sense, but I'm not Dark Horse. I don't have my own, you know, manga publication company, So what can I say?
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with that one. Also, this is big news to me anyway. Spirited Away DVD lawsuit is now settled. The Yahoo News that the lawsuit over the colors on the Japanese Spirited Away DVD release has been settled.
Yes, for those people that don't remember, this has been going on for 2 years now.
Yeah, it's been going on
back
for a while.
In 2002, a number of Ghibli fans that had bought the Disney DVD release of Spirited Away in Japan were very disappointed because there was this red tint on it. Apparently, this tint was put on to go and give better visual quality to people who were using video projectors to go and view the film. And they claimed that this was in the original theatrical version. So this lawsuit was brought forth. Ziga, since we caught everybody up, let's carry on.
Alrighty. Walt Disney has also agreed to express regret to people who bought the DVD. And to inform the public whenever it makes changes to films in the future. This applies to all DVD releases in Japan, not merely Spirited Away. I think it's a smart move on Disney.
I think it's a great thing that the company is being held liable for things that it does instead of just skirting it off.
Oh, yeah. I gotta take the responsibility. Somebody's gotta take it. And I think, I actually do think that Disney is good for doing that. In addition, Disney has agreed to replace the plaintiff's DVDs and give them each 10,000 yen, or that would be around $90.
Yes, the three plaintiffs launched the lawsuit back in December of 2002, the real annoying red tint, and and I guess that it's supposed to, I'm sorry, it wasn't on projectors, plasma television screens with the 9300K color temperature. So, yeah, that's a ton of people. Anyways, the requirement was that Disney inform the public of changes for future DVDs, and it's actually going to make it difficult for the company to claim they purposely adjusted the video in order to cover up production errors, which may make it more difficult for Disney, but I think in the long run, everybody wins.
Yeah.
Alright, well, enough of that bit of a disjointed story from long ago. Let's wrap this up, Z-Guy.
Alright. The Cartoon Network October schedule, we kind of looked it up here. It looks like on Saturday, October 23rd, Rurouni
Kenshin
will replace Gundam Seed at 10:30.
Apparently, Gundam Seed wasn't really bringing in the ratings to continue airing it, so they're bringing back the oldie but goodie Rurouni Kenshin, which for those that haven't seen, it's a bit like Trigun except in medieval Japan, which kind of sounds weird when you say it out loud, but, you know, whatever.
And it goes how it goes, I guess. The new episodes of Inuyasha will be skipped on October 23rd and the 30th, and in its place will be the Animatrix and Read or Die, which will be broadcast in that time slot. I guess it's kind of a variety thing they're trying to come up with for October.
Yeah, Cartoon Network's kind of trying to do a Halloween special for the month of October.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to be swapping in the Animatrix to Read or Die, which is not really hard. But they're just kind of trying to mix it up. They've got some Halloween-themed shows and stuff, too. But I'm glad to see them showing Read or Die. Looks like a very funny series. Kind of a James Bond meets librarian. So it's going to be mighty funny. Animatrix, I don't know where they're pulling that out of their hat, but I guess since Warner Brothers owns Animatrix, they could air it without paying any royalties. So
It's
all good. Personally, I'd like to see them change that time slot to like a variety slot permanently, so each week there's something new, but I guess Inuyasha must have the midnight time slot for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they could just make Adult Swim longer, you know. I mean, they repeat it twice, but, you know, there's no reason why they can't just repeat it once, but with a lot of different shows.
Yeah, that'd be really nice if they do that.
Well, I think that wraps up our news. It's time to go and review another cyberpunk anime film, if you will, since we mentioned Ghost in the Shell. This episode, we're going to be reviewing Serial Experiments Lame, Volume 1.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a new view, it's not a preview, it's a review. Anime review.
Alright, G-Guy, do you know what time it is? It's Miller time.
Oh.
Nothing like the cool, relaxing flavor of Miller brand beer. Hey, wait a minute. This isn't Miller brand beer at all, it's just carbonated urine. Yeah, there's just been told. Besides, carbonated urine has taste. but what would I know? No, it's time for the video. You know, I'm really stuck on video games, man. I need to stop playing PS4 so much. No, we're reviewing Serial Experiments Lane for our anime review this week.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Z-Guy, if you do the honors, would you please introduce our audience to the basic plot line for Volume 1 of Serial Experiments Lane, and kind of a bit of an intro to the show itself?
All right. I had the great opportunity of watching Lane this morning. I forgot I work an overnight shift. Anyway.
It's very confusing.
Yeah, it is. Try it sometime. No, don't. Anyway, I got around to watching that, and it seems like Lane is the story about a young girl who happens to be in junior high, I believe. And she has a bunch of friends, and one of these friends happened to commit suicide. This happens in the introduction of the movie.
Which she doesn't really seem all that upset about.
Yeah, which was really strange. Her friends were really upset, though. Anyway.
Of course, that actually works in later into the series, the isolation in a modern world theory that's rather popular in Japanese science fiction. Uh-huh. Go ahead, James.
All right, this girl, I believe her name is Chisa?
Chisa.
She kills herself, but she happens to be able to send emails and stuff like this to her friends, which disturbs them greatly.
Let me interrupt for just a second.
Go ahead.
Send emails from beyond the grave. Sorry. Go ahead.
So, anyway, as far as all of her friends are concerned, she's dead, and so they're pretty broken up about this. But Lane, she's not so upset. In fact, she gets into her navvy, and she keeps on waiting for more calls from this friend. Because
a navvy being a futuristic computer.
Oh, yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, exactly. That you can talk to and stuff. It's so cool. You had to see the anime just for that. But her father's really into it, and so her father is kind of concerned and wants to get her a new navvy, one of these computers. And so one arrives in the mail, and she starts getting into this really interesting plot from there. There's something about the Wired and something about these little bugs that...
Wired being the online version, future version of the Internet.
Like chat or something like that. She can go on and you can actually hear the voices and stuff like that, and it's kind of weird, but it kind of gets a religious tone on it by the time the fourth episode is up, but that's basically out of the storyline.
It's, they have some really interesting artwork in this anime. For those who have not seen it, imagine a popular film from the 60s or 70s that acid heads, as they say, would like to go and see. This uses all sorts of crazy effects to create a really stylistic environment. For example, the bright sunshine outside of Lane's house makes it so that the whole street is more or less bathed in white, except for the shadows left by the telephone poles. And so it creates a very interesting effect, as though the door, when it closes, fades into all of this whiteness. Other things, like when thoughts are happening, it's presented in this, I guess you could say, tie-dyed, rippling field. Other things, like she might be daydreaming, and she'd imagine what happens to the spirit after one dies, and she'd see her spirit coming out of her fingers and filling up the room. Other crazy things like that, you know, just more or less, I guess you could say, a visual representation of abstract thought.
Mm-hmm.
It's really the best way to describe the way this series looks.
Yeah, it kind of gives it a surreal feeling. I kind of actually like it.
Very well planned as far as the, does it ever actually say in the show when in time this is supposed to take place?
I don't know. They don't.
Yeah, I'd say it's supposed to be set 30 years from now. You know, just give a rough figure. So it's in the very near future. And just the way that it's put together, you can actually see things kind of being like they are in Serial Experiments Lane. It's not that far-fetched. It kind of just kind of shows the evolution of how things would be in, say, 30 years' time.
Uh-huh.
And so that's very interesting because the computers and everything are really thought out well. The audio goes and it complements how everything is done. Like Z-Guy was saying,
all of the computers you don't actually have to type into. I mean, it's still optional. You can still type into the computers. But the main interface is to actually speak to the navvies, and then the navvies will reply back to you, which actually we have that technology today. It's just not very advanced.
Exactly.
So, of course, 30 years from now, things have advanced, and obviously computers can only get so much more powerful before people go, well, they're just more powerful, nothing really new is happening, let's go and do this and refine it. So, anyways, a very nice, it's kind of interesting with the characters, though, is because all of the characters, it's, you don't really grow attached to the characters. They're more like actors in a play than they are the sense, not actual, you know, actors in a play, even of course they're actors. What I mean is that you get the feeling that they're just playing their roles, that they're not actually, you don't get attached to them, though that's just there to get the story across. No one really seems to care about anyone in this show. Lane has a group of people that she's friends with, but I wouldn't exactly say that they were her friends. They're just a group of friends that she hangs out with, and they walk to school together. Because they're not really that close, but the friends are close. She's not close to her dad, she's not close to her mom or sister, a little bit closer to her dad than the others, but there's not really much there because her mom's off in her own little world, her sister's caring about high school, and her dad's a busy salary man who, when he's at home, spends all the time with his computers. So on the one hand, you don't get really attached to these characters because, well, in a sense, they're not very likable. But in another sense, this is trying to convey across the isolation of our ever more connected world, in an ironic twist, a world where it's much easier to communicate than it was in the past, but all this communication that's so easy with so many people becomes overbearing to the fact that you'd rather avoid conversing with those in your immediate life and rather seek down those strangers that you will probably never meet across the wired.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a pretty good summary of things.
I think so.
Anyways, the show really kind of has to be taken as a whole. Each volume is very good, of course. Each episode is very good. But it's a slow-paced show, and so this may turn off some people that like their shows to be full of action or romance or what have you, or comedy like Ramna. And this show is definitely none of those. This is most definitely, I'd almost say, an anti-dramatic drama, if that makes a lick of sense.
I know it doesn't, but it works in this one.
Yes. Well, there actually is a bit of mystery going on. There's these mysterious men that appear to start stalking Lane after she starts to get involved with The Wired, and Lane thinks it may be connected to her friend who is seemingly continuing to send emails to her from The Wired.
Mm-hmm.
So, very interesting show, very good premise. I've seen, I think, more or less just the first four episodes in the past on VHS, and so this DVD covers that same territory that I've seen before. So it'll be interesting to see how this series goes and concludes. I know it was playing for a while, and it may still be playing on G4 Tech TV, on their Anime Invasion, or whatever it's called. Explosion, that's right, I think, Anime Explosion. I don't know if that's still playing. Caught a bit here, caught a bit there, but trust me, you're going to want to go with the Japanese dub on this. The English dub, respectable, but the Japanese dub, much, much better. But of course, that's almost universal.
Oh,
yeah. Alright, well, Z-Guy, what do you give this show on our rating scale? Does it get a not recommended, a neutral, a recommended, highly recommended, or top recommendation?
We got a new one in there, I think, from the last time I was here.
No, same old scale. Though
same
the video
scale.
Game reviews have switched. Those are no longer on our 10-point scale, but on the anime review scale.
All right. And this movie, I love the feeling that it gives. I like its pace, even though it's not slow-paced. It has its own style. Therefore, I think I would give it a little bit lenient. I do like the show a lot. I would probably give this a highly recommended.
I also like this show quite a bit. However, watching it this time was actually my second time watching it through. And one of the things Serial Experiments Lane doesn't do well is it's not high on the replayability. There's a definite wow factor with the graphics, even though it's, what, was it 6 years old now?
Yeah.
Yeah, 6 years old. Still has a bit of a wow factor, not as strong. But you kind of go and you learn all the mysteries and whatnot, so watching the show again, there's not nearly as much appeal. So because of the slow pace and the low replayability, I'm going to have to go and give this a recommended. Though I did side with Z-Guy when I first watched this, it was definitely a highly recommended.
Fan mail, 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 fan mail!
Well, this week, we have some very interesting fan mail. And by interesting, I mean none at all. That's right, once again, sadly enough, we are without fan mail. And a show such as Acer Radio without fan mail is like a bloodstream without plasma. The key components are there, but it just can't flow. And so we ask you, the fans, to go and send us in some fan mail to read on our anime show. Now, an anime talk radio show has to have things to talk about. So we review stuff, we do the news, but we need fan mail. We need encouragement. Not only do that, we need that, but we need to go and say to our fans that are wrong, hey, that's not right. Or, hey, you're a dumbass. We don't like to say that too much, because that's rather rude. So, my point is that we'd appreciate you sending in some fan mail. I've actually been tracking down some old fans of the show, sending them emails, trying to get in contact with them. So hopefully we'll be having a lot more fan mail here soon. I'm trying to get a hold of Anthony Max Hernandez. If I get a hold of him, we'll certainly have a lot of fan mail. And I'm not talking quantity of letters. I'm talking quantity of words. We always appreciate him writing in and all of our listeners. If Anthony Max or Azure or Warp Shadow or Link 1986 or any of our fans are listening out there in ASO Land, please be sure to go ahead and drop us an email at asoradio@nz17.com. Or alternatively, go ahead and send me a message on the forum. Just send a private message to NZ17. I'd say send it to Z-Guy, but Z-Guy's rather busy and he can't spend much time on the forum. So, until next week, I guess, this concludes our fan mail.
Oh, baby, a hot spot.
All right, and that's for one of the best parts of the show, in my opinion, the hot spot. Not the best part because it's like super quality. Sorry, whole show is super quality. Hey, I'm not biased. But because the hotspot lends a needed bit of variety to the whole affair. By going and having the hotspot, we can have editorials or a new feature I'm bringing up called Raven Rant. But we also have manga reviews and video game reviews, convention coverage, interviews. Of course, we have all sorts of crazy views if you think about it on this show. This week, however, we're going to be featuring a video game review by none other than our very own Z-Guy of the very highly anticipated sequel to Xenogears. Yes, that's right, for the PlayStation 2, we're going to be reviewing Xenosaga. Z-Guy, take it away.
Alright. First of all, I would like to say that Xenosaga is not actually a sequel. It's more like a prequel.
Well, it's another entry in the series.
To explain a little bit about that, I guess, you could say that Xenogears is part 5 of the part 6 series, so since they weren't able to do that on the PlayStation, now they're going over and redoing the series. Thus, Xenosaga is the first of this series, and I'm really, really sure that we're going to see a lot more of these.
To put things in perspective, it's kind of like the Star Wars movies. Is George Lucas originally planned to do a total of 9 movies and 3 trilogies. Now, the reason he didn't start with the first movie or first chapter of the book is, well, it's kind of like Shenmue 1 or, what's that other movie? Don't matter. Anyways, it's like a big setup for the rest of the film. And so since the middle part was the most exciting, he made that trilogy first. And so it's kind of the same with the Xeno series, is that Xenosaga, the 5th chapter, in a way is the most exciting. There's bits seen of chapters 3 and 4, I believe, in Xenogears. But mainly, it's episode 5 that I guess you could say has the meat and potatoes. Eventually, all of these are supposed to be realized into their own games. And Xenosaga was actually supposed to end up being the first chapter of this 6th chapter story. But instead of because it was originally supposed to be one game for each in chapter in the series. Right. Then they decided to go and break it down so that each chapter was two games. So the story of Xenosaga, or Episode 1, would be the first two chapters. Then the next, two games would make the first chapter, two games would make the second chapter, so on and so forth. But then, they just got stretched out even further, so now just the first chapter is going to be six games long. So this is like the intro to the intro of the intro of the series. Sorry about that, Z guy. I thought I just should film it.
Oh, no, that's okay. I actually think that Monolith is trying to go up against these Final Fantasy games, and they need, I'd say, a really long story to come up with, to get up with all, what, how many Final Fantasies are there now?
They're going to be releasing 12 next year.
Oh, jeez. There's more than a dozen out there, so, you know, they have to.
That's not including the spinoffs or anything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the spinoffs, there's like three of those, aren't there?
No, there's more than that.
Anyway, to put it simply, I think they're trying to, like, really compete here.
Yeah, and Monolith is making an enormous storyline.
Oh, they are great at that, let me tell you what. But it's good, because Xenosaga is pretty much in-depth story as Xenogears or Chrono Trigger was, if any of you guys out there played either of those games. Excellent games. I think it's great that these guys are continuing on with the series. Now, since they're doing a series, these games might end up a little bit different. They're trying to do it, so they might leave some stuff off at the end of the game and whatnot.
It's kind of like they're growing as they go, find out what does and doesn't work.
Exactly. So, nonetheless, even though Xenosaga, the first episode of, I guess, an intro to an intro to an intro, however it goes. Anyway, let's see. The storyline is very interesting. What happens is this person named Sion, girl, female.
Not to be confused with Sean, the popular basketball player.
She's the head of a company called Vector, who is making,
not to be confused with Vector the Crocodile from the Sonic series.
And they're making this type of android, and I believe that they're made out of nanomachines. And the prototype of these is called Cosmos. Cosmos is the incredibly hot girl with blue hair.
Who actually isn't a girl at all.
Yeah, exactly. And they start off the game testing her out, but it turns out that this strange alien race called the Gnosis come out of nowhere, and in a spirit form, they start wreaking havoc all over the ship that they're in. So
obviously not the spirit form of Christmas.
Exactly. So through some sort of Hinopsis wave, I believe they call it, they are able to bring these creatures into the real world so that they can fight them. In doing such, they destroy a good part of them, and so the Gnosis kind of go along their way. And so Sion, another person, I forget his name, he's kind of a minor character in this game. I think he might actually be a higher role in one of these next games, because it was kind of a setup for that. But it was her, him, and then Cosmos were the three out there. And what would you call it, a wreckage salvager ship comes and rescues them, and they all head off to a different part of space called Second Militia that had some giant event happen to it a long time ago. I think it was destroyed or something like that.
Actually, it was a charity concert hosted by the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC. Rather popular event, but the crowd got a bit rowdy when they wouldn't do a fifth encore, and thus ensured great destruction. They haven't held a event like that at Second Militia since.
From there, a lot of the other characters, main characters of this game, are introduced as well. We have the Cyborg and Momo, of course.
Not to be confused with Momo from Breath of Fire 3.
And Cyborg has under her care Momo, since her real parents are fairly occupied in different parts of space, but
space hookers.
Oh, yeah. Dangerous stuff.
Because if you think a pimp is scary, a space pimp is 10 times worse.
So it seems like all of our characters kind of take on this race, and where they're racing against time. A lot of people have the confusion that the Zohar from Xenogears has a big part to do in this game. It really doesn't. It does have a minor role, and we will see more of it later, but not exactly right now. I think the main urgency in this game is trying to defeat a person called Albedo, which happens to be, I guess you could say, the brother of Junior, in a way. And since they have the same DNA and whatnot, you'll have to...
So, let me see if I get this straight, Z-Guy. They're made both from the same DNA, and Junior is sort of, I guess you could say, a brother to Albedo, like a twin brother. So, that makes Albedo a Junior Mint?
Well, yeah, she could.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's minted from his brother's DNA, so it's all good.
Well, I think it has something to do with cloning, let's say.
Let's hope it doesn't go the same way as Star Wars Episode 2 does when Xenosaga Episode 2 comes out. Alright, well, that's a good summary of the story, but this is a game, so how about you tell us how the gameplay breaks down?
The gameplay breaks down is pretty simple. It's an RPG, basic layout. It does have a very unique system that it works out with, the battle system. It is turn-based, one character by character.
Because we all know how polite RPG characters are.
Oh, yeah. No, one at a time, you know. Anyway, there are three different types of characters or creatures that you can battle. The Gnosis, a Mechanical, and a Bio. Of course, most of what you're going to see in this game is Bio or Gnosis. Gnosis is the main thing. And I do like their battle system a lot. It's really complicated. It has different points that you can get, special points, experience points, and two others. And you use all these in kind of a combination to balance your character out. I guess I would be justified in saying it's a system about as complicated as Final Fantasy VIII was, but a lot better, because you don't lose any stats by using spells or anything like that.
And I can't count the number of times that I had to spend just an hour or so drawing spells from enemies in Final Fantasy VIII. I guess there's an easier way to do that by using the guardians, the summons, but honestly, it don't point that out in the manual.
Oh, yeah, totally. So, the battle system overall, I really like it. When you're not in battle mode... Oh, I forgot one thing in battle mode, the eggs, they call them. Kind of like the...
AWGS, right?
AWGS. And they don't take a big part in this game. I guess they will later, but I would just prefer to play with my normal characters, because you always seem at a loss if you're playing one of these eggs. So.
Yeah, I wonder if you get up to level 99, if you can break dance with your mech. Because honestly, there's nothing cooler than break dancing down to some heavy music in a mech.
Oh, that would be sweet.
Of course, you got to make sure you're out of the city when you do it.
Yeah, you might have a little bit of trouble there.
Indeed. So, alright, does the game control well? Does it flow well with the gameplay system?
It does. Of course, not in battle mode. You are in a basic... It's totally 3D. There's nothing about it. The only thing that I did not like is you cannot rotate the camera in any other direction than just one way.
So, since the camera is kind of fixed, I mean, it follows you along, but you have no direct control over it.
Right.
Is there ever any problems with the camera angles themselves?
Not really. They do have the layout out of the game. Pretty simple. If you go behind a wall, of course the camera's going to raise up, and they didn't make it so you're going to be behind a wall and you can't see a darn thing. They were good enough to do that. They also put in a radar, which will show you where your enemies are, because they are visible on the map, and you can avoid them if you want.
Somewhat like Chrono Trigger or the Grandia series.
Yes, exactly. Or Mario RPG, I guess. Mm. So, I like how they have that layout, so... I actually care less either way, but I like the way they've kind of manipulated it.
Now, if I remember right, doesn't some of the objects in the game become translucent if your characters are behind them so you can see.
That is true as well.
Alright, well, one thing that I was meaning to ask about the game is, does it make good use of, how to put this exactly, non-visual features? For example, is the, since the modern systems have this built into them, does the rumblers in the controller respond well to events in the game? And also, what about sound effects and whatnot? Does it really immerse you, or is it just kind of stock sound effects they use here?
I think they did go a little bit lightly on the sound effects. They don't really immerse you. They do have pretty good, it's standard. It's not anything special, it's not anything bad. The Rumble Pack, they do use a lot of that. I think they did make a good use out of that. Nothing wrong there. Let's see. I guess there's no smell or taste.
That'll be in the third
stuff.
Game. Third game. After all, everybody wants to know how a choo-choo tastes.
Oh.
all right, well, what about the music? Now, I understand longtime RPG composer Mitsuda was on this one, who had previously worked on the Chrono Games and Xenogears.
I think Yoshinori, he actually did kind of his own style. He wasn't, like, tied down to what anybody said in this one. And he used his music like he usually does when he makes a CD that's not doesn't have to do with the game. He kind of gets that kind of jumpity-uppity feel that I actually really like. It's more, it doesn't feel like an old game anymore. It's kind of like new music, you know, what you would look up on the internet as far as music goes in Japan. I really do like the way that they used it. It's kind of got a new feeling to it, and I like Yoshinori Mitsuda for what he's getting into.
Now, Chrono Cross had a very Celtic feel to it.
It did.
And Xenogears had a nice variety of music, but a number of those tracks were also Celtic-inspired. Mm-hmm. Does this show in Xenosaga?
Not really. You can still kind of taste that Celtic flavor in there, but... He's going for, Yoshinori is really going for his own style in this one.
Now, as an aside, is he not returning for the sequel to this game?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think I heard that he was actually leaving to work on a different project, and so either there's a new, brand new composer, or he just has a light hand in it, and this new composer is doing the majority of the music. So we'll have to see how that pans out.
Yeah,
it will. I definitely miss his presence. He does a really nice job.
He always does a really nice job.
Okay, well, so we've covered the gameplay, the control, the audio, the music, immersion, and whatnot. The only real two categories left, and you covered one of these in part, is graphics, and also the replayability factor. And replayability, give us a bit of an idea how replayable the game is, and also the number of hours that you got through from your original playthrough.
Ooh, my original playthrough was about 80 hours. It's probably a little bit long for what the recommendation was. I think the recommended was about 60 hours, was it? I tend to take a long time in my RPGs. I like the battle system a lot in this one. That's probably why I took so much time in it. I do think there is a replayability factor. It would probably be for leveling up whatnot more than maybe what you did the first time, and to get a few more tidbits on the storyline that you got out of the first time. I wouldn't say it's really especially high.
So the replayability more stems from going back and getting things that you may have missed the first time, items or weapons, or being a higher level so you can take on something rather you couldn't earlier.
Yeah.
And so... when you were saying about the story, are you saying that you get new story when you play through a second time, or that you catch things that you didn't catch the first time because of what you know after you finish the game?
Oh, you know this team and the way that they make games and their colossus storylines that they got. It's a big storyline, even just for an introduction of a video game. So, it's pretty much just getting what you missed. I'm sure I missed a ton of stuff in there, but... the replay, I think, would be more about getting the stuff that you missed, because there are a lot of hidden items in the game.
All right, well, before you go and give us your final review for this game, How about you go and tell us how the future prospects are looking for the next entry in the series, which came out in Japan a while back. I guess it's actually due this year. Is it this year in America before Christmas?
I thought it was early next year.
They probably pushed that back to avoid the sales rush of these last 4 months of the year. But go and give us your prospective ideas on how the next game will be and future installments based off of both what you've played and what you've heard.
Let's see. The next one that's coming up seems like I'm going to say it's going to have to wrap up a lot of the things that went on in the first one. They did leave a lot of stuff uncovered in Xenosaga in their storyline, and it just leaves a craving for more if you really do like this series.
And if you read the fan-made comics, what they left uncovered was the girls.
So I think that they will continue on with the storyline that they got going with the mystery about Albedo and what the devil he's up to and whatnot, because they did have a big clash on something that probably looks like would be one of Albedo's biggest assets, but really might not be in the next game, and he's got something bigger coming for you. So it's him and I guess you could say his boss. I can't remember his name, but he was kind of a minor character as well. I'm really, really, really hoping to see more of this Saiten look-alike figure. I didn't catch his name. He's the brother of Shion, so...
And
really
Shion actually has the last name of Yuzuki, which Saiten had in the first game.
That's right. And so her brother also has the last name of Yuzuki. I don't know what his first name is. I don't think they've revealed that yet, if I remember right. But
I think it's actually something with a J, but...
I'm going to have to look into that again. I haven't looked it up for a while, but...
So your perspective, then, is that the future of this series looks sunny?
I think it does look sunny. It's got a lot of things going for it, not only with Albedo and his little group that he's got going, but also for future revelations on the Zohar, its origin and its future, and why it was the core of this game in general, Gears. And so it should have a bigger prospect here in the next game.
And I'm sure you'll go ahead and give us a very thorough follow-up when that next game comes out.
Oh, yeah.
All right, well then, Z-Guy, taking all of these factors into account and disregarding personal preferences as much as you can, what would you end up giving this game on our rating scale? And remember, we're off the 10-point system. We're now on the anime review rating system. So, anything from not recommended to top recommendation is in your play field.
I guess it depends on how much you like this kind of game. If you're the kind of guy who likes RPGs and you like the earlier Chrono series, I think you'll like this one. Me, my personal rating on this one is going to be a highly recommended, not a top recommended, because it is kind of missing a few themes. And I think we'll probably see those in the next games coming up. They'll improve, getting to know what the audience likes. And I would highly recommend this for anybody that's out there. If you don't like this kind of game, you probably wouldn't like to get into it. It might bore you a little. Who knows? You might want to get into one of the later games.
Well, I have heard of the rather long story sequences. Hopefully they'll allow for more of a break in between. But you can at least pause during the story sequences. So that's definitely a plus.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, you got it from Z-Guy's mouth himself. Highly recommended for this game. And so let's wrap up this video game review with a quick little question. Z-Guy, do you know what a pirate's favorite genre of video games is?
No.
Very simple, they're RPGs. Well, looks like we've wrapped up another episode of ASO Radio. Rather nice show all in all. Kind of funny how well it all tied together. You know, Serial Experiments Lane ties in with the Ghost in the Shell in the news, and both of those tie into Xenogears and Xenosaga, all with their futuristic stories and whatnot. Kind of funny how that all works out, but then again, at ASO Radio, we roll with the tides and take whatever fate delivers to us. So, next week, please be sure to join us for episode 58, because we just keep rolling out the hits. Unfortunately, as I probably should have mentioned at the beginning of this show, we were unable to, unfortunately, go to NamDesuCon this year. Made us all rather sad. We tried earnestly to have everything in order, but when the car's giving us troubles and you got no money, the saddest thing is you can't go to an anime con, honey. So we had to call it quits for our con season this year. Perhaps, though, we may have a surprise to announce next week. But regardless of whether or not we have a surprise to announce, I can go and deliver the news that next week we shall be joined by DB3. So be sure to look forward to a review from Z-Guy, DB3, and myself of the final two volumes of Love Hina.
Yay!
Yes, yay indeed. T-Man and I reviewed the second volume of Love Hina. And so DB3 is just finishing watching it himself. And so then we'll review the last volumes of Love Hina, which actually was like a 6 or 7 volume series. I don't know. But we don't feel like dragging it out any further. So whatever it is, like from 4 to the end of the series, we're going to review. And then later on, we'll review the Christmas, Spring, and Love Hina again.
Ooh, I love this series.
It is a very good series. Out of all of those Shonen, wait, no, that's wrong. out of all of those harem animes where a bunch of chicks fall in love with a guy, this is definitely one of the best.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, can't say too much more or else we'll have nothing for the review next week.
All right.
So for episode 57, this is NV17
and Z-Guy
signing out. Join us next week, same ASO time, same ASO channel, same ASO kicking website.